our rock and redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. When my mother and father first became serious about following Jesus, they joined a fundamentalist Baptist church. And the people in this church were really lovely. They welcomed us with open arms, and they became our closest friends. But they did have quite a few rules. One of them was that alcohol should not be consumed recreationally under any circumstances ever. World without end. One day during those early years, my mom happened to be driving past the liquor store, and she saw someone from our church coming out of the store with some bottles. And she found herself feeling rather indignant. She thought, that person is quite the hypocrite. She is certainly not acting like a serious Christian. That same week, our next door neighbor, who poured concrete for a living, offered to bring some of his friends to help us finish a sidewalk that we'd been framing up and working on. And when my dad asked how he wanted to be paid, he replied, just make sure you don't run out of beer. And so it was that my teetotaling Baptist mother found herself in the same liquor store less than a week later, buying enough beer to satisfy a whole crew of thirsty men. Who says that God has no sense of humor? There is something lodged within our humanity that makes us want to judge and then to separate, to divide and then to exclude. But today's passage shows us just how wide is the embrace of God to those that we may be inclined to leave out. Perhaps you have felt left out at some point. Have you ever just felt like you don't belong, like you just don't fit, like you were on the outside looking in? I think a great many of us have struggled with this from time to time. There are some, I know, who struggle with it frequently, even constantly. And if you have ever felt this way, if you are feeling this way now, today's reading from the Acts of the Apostles is especially important for you. And if you have ever made someone else feel this way, even accidentally, inadvertently, then the reading is equally important for you. The lectionary readings during Eastertide are chosen to show us how completely things have changed as a result of the resurrection of Jesus. In the past several weeks, we have talked about how the resurrected Jesus walks with us in our doubts, how he restores us when we deny him. And today we will see that Jesus' resurrection changes things not only for us as individuals, but also for us as a community. And our reading in Acts is a kind of a watershed. It sets the church off in a very different direction. I might be being overly dramatic, but I don't think so. If Acts 10 and 11 had not taken place, there is every reason to believe, at least by human calculation, barring some other miracle of God, that the church itself may have ceased to exist. The story really begins in Acts 10 with a man named Cornelius. And socially, Cornelius had three strikes against him right off the bat. He was a Roman, and therefore he was a Gentile. He was a foreign soldier, it says, of the Italian cohort. And he was a centurion, a leader of soldiers, and he was part of an occupying force. And it is not much wonder that people wanted to keep their distance. Now, in his defense, he and his family feared God, and he had a good reputation among the people for a Roman. But God is about to upend the social order, or at least make it subject to a far higher purpose. And so he appears to Cornelius in a vision, and he tells him where to find Peter the Apostle. Meanwhile, Peter the Apostle is also having a vision, and he sees this sheet full of ceremonially unclean animals, and it appears to him three times. And each time a voice tells him to kill and eat some of these animals. And think of this from Peter's standpoint, the very thought of this would have made his stomach turn. As a Jewish man, Peter would have been trained since birth to avoid all such foods, to regard them as unclean. But the heavenly voice kept telling him the foods were clean. And the text tells us that Peter was puzzled. He had no idea what to make of it. And then God brings them together, these two men, Peter and Cornelius, a Jew and a Gentile, two men who probably had no idea how much they needed each other in this moment in salvation history. So there are four things I notice about the text, and I'd like to just comment briefly on each of them. First, I notice the repetition. How many times does the sheet appear? Three times, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But the repetition I noticed more was that the story itself appears twice. We read the whole story in Acts chapter 10, and then we read the same story virtually again in Acts chapter 11, as Peter recounts what happened for the Jerusalem church. And as a modern Western person, I find this really inefficient. I feel like there should have been a better editor involved in the preparation of this, because don't you know, my time is rather valuable. But as an ancient, Luke understood that there were far more important things than efficiency. And careful study reveals that these two accounts are not exactly the same. The second account in chapter 11, the one that was read this morning, is much more Semitic. It's much more Jewish in style than Luke's usual writing. And some believe that in chapter 11, the bit we read today, Luke may be quoting a very early document, possibly written in Aramaic, which was the language the Jewish people spoke at that time. And if this is true, it would show that the story was important enough to have been written down very, very early in the life of the ancient church. Regardless, in ancient writing, the most common way to stress the importance of something is by repetition. And by that standard, it is clear that this story, it's just a really important story. Secondly, I notice the unmistakable providence of God. There are visions and angels and divine appointments, and there is no doubt that God is taking exceptional measures to bring these two people together. And this also signals the reader that what is going on here really matters. Third, I notice Peter's takeaway, his interpretation from the dream. I think the point that I would have taken from the dream is that I should not regard any food as being unclean. But that's not really the point that Peter takes from the dream and from everything else that goes on in this chapter. The point he takes is that he shouldn't regard any person as unclean. Back in Acts 10:28, Peter says, when talking to the Gentiles in Cornelius's house, "You yourselves know that it is not lawful for a Jew to associate with or visit a Gentile, but God has shown me that I should not call anyone profane or unclean." So why this switch? Why are these two connected in his mind? Why the movement from regarding no food as unclean to regarding no person as unclean? Well, going back to the book of Leviticus, the source of the food laws that are in question here, we learn that a major reason that they are given in the first place is to set God's people apart, to show the nations around that they are unique. The food laws were a way of showing how different they were. And this was quite important at the time, in that moment in the history of salvation. But as we look at the post-resurrection gospel of Jesus, there is this huge change in focus. The focus is not so much on how unique the people of God are, but on how unique Jesus is. The text is not so much interested in our differences with others, but actually our commonalities. We are all human and therefore in need of connection with God. We are all in need of deliverance from spiritual and physical death. And the Easter gospel is that Jesus is uniquely qualified to give us all of us, hope for these things, whether we are Jew or Gentile, male or female, slave or free. And so the task of the church is not to divide people into groups, but to see people united in Christ. And this requires a different way of thinking. Our sociology must be subject to our theology. Now imagine for a moment, you're Peter. How hard would this have been for him? A lifetime of training which said you should not even eat with a Gentile or you would be rendered unclean. And now here he is, he's staying with Gentiles, he's eating with Gentiles, and most importantly, he's welcoming Gentiles into the church. This is a big deal. And this brings me to my fourth observation. All of Peter's life, he had been taught that there was one way for a man to become a part of the people of God: circumcision. This was the covenant sign of the Jewish people. There was simply no way to be male and Jewish without being circumcised. But remarkably, Peter doesn't tell Cornelius to be circumcised. He tells him to be baptized. So what is happening here? Well, this signals a profound change for the church. Up until now, it was expected that becoming a Christian meant becoming Jewish. And now here are people being welcomed into the church without going through that sort of intermediary step of becoming Jewish. Why? Because God had made it obvious that he had poured out his Spirit on all people, Jewish people, Gentile people, all people. Now, the early church continues to wrestle with this for a long time through the New Testament. You follow the theme through in the book of Acts. They're still wrestling. You get into Paul's epistles. You can see them still wrestling. And I am so thankful they did, because slowly over time, the earliest church managed to subject its human sociological instincts to these new theological realities brought on by the resurrection of Jesus. And so we continue in that vein and in that process. It is our job to wrestle. How are we doing? Are we wrestling? This is still our calling. The text is meant to remind us that the church is not an exclusive club. If you are human, you are invited. There is no ethnic litmus test. You don't have to have a certain IQ or make a certain amount of money or have a certain social status. You don't have to like a certain type of music. You don't have to vote a certain way or give a certain amount of money. And surprisingly, there is not even a moral prerequisite. Shock. There isn't. Anyone who is willing to follow Jesus, however imperfect, is welcome to be baptized. And those who are not interested in following Jesus are to be treated with respect and with dignity. And during those times in history when the church has remembered this, God has used it to bring forth good fruit. But during those times when we have reverted to our own human ways of dividing and excluding, we have sown despair and abuse. And so God is inviting us to make it our calling as individuals, but also as his church collected, as a parish, to seek and to watch for his Spirit where we may not expect it, to watch for those who may feel left out, neglected, or pushed aside, to share the good news that because of Jesus' death, because of Jesus' resurrection, whosoever will may come. Thanks be to God.